Today we're going to discuss contemporary cases of Maris Ayin. But before we discuss contemporary cases, we need to ask a more basic question. Should I care what anyone thinks? Maris Ayin means I have to be concerned if someone has the wrong impression about what I'm doing. But why should I care what anyone thinks? If they misinterpret what I'm doing, why is it my fault? It should be their fault. If they think that, let's say, I'm a bad person, or some people think I'm a bad person because of what I'm doing, should I really care? And, or perhaps the question is, when should I care and how much should I care? So just let me make a couple of introductory points. I heard in the name of Rav Soloveitchik that we don't own our reputation. We have no right to sully our reputation because our reputation is so much greater than ourselves, and we don't have the right not to care. So yes, I should care what other people think because my reputation does not belong to me. Perhaps on a deeper level, there's a Gemara in Yoma, Daf Pei Vav Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says that if someone let's say, is a Talmud Chacham, or let's say someone is known to be an individual who follows Torah and mitzvot, at least in theory, and people look at him and they see that he treats other people respectfully. So the Gemara in Yoma Daf Pei Vav Amud Aleph says that this is a fulfillment of Ahavta Hashem Elokecha, that you should love Hashem your God, which means you should make the name of Hashem beloved. That other people should say, Ashrei Aviv Shelimdo Torah, Ashrei Rabo Shelimdo Torah. Happy is his father who taught him Torah. Happy is his teacher who taught him Torah. Oy lehem lebriyo shelo limdo Torah. And woe to those people who have not studied Torah. However, if someone, let's say, learns Torah and serves Talmidei Chachamim, but he is not, his business practices are not done faithfully, he doesn't speak properly to other people, then people say, Oy lo liploni shelamda Torah, shelimo Torah, Oy lo laavi shelimdo Torah, woe to so-and-so who studied Torah, woe to his father who taught him Torah, Oy lo lerabo shelimdo Torah, woe to his Rebbe who taught him Torah. So we see here that not only is our reputation not our own, but it's more than that, it seems. It seems that if we supposedly represent Torah and mitzvot, if we're Orthodox Jews, if we supposedly keep Torah and mitzvot, and we act in a way that is inappropriate, and people will say that God's Torah is not good. That God's Torah just produces bad behavior, unethical behavior. So our behavior, good or bad, reflects either well or poorly on God. And that's why it's important what other people think of us. Obviously, there's a question, to what extent should we be concerned? That we're going to speak about. But on a basic level, how we behave reflects the reputation, not only our reputation, but the reputation of God's Torah, and I would say God himself. The Chasam Sofer has a piece in Chelek Vav, Likutim Simon Nun Tes, where he writes that Kol Yomai Hayisim Mitzta'ar L'Mikra Hazeh V'Yisim Nekiim Hashem U'Mi Yisrael. And he said he was always troubled by the pasuk of being naki, being clean from Hashem and from the Jewish people. And he says that maybe you could fulfill the mitzvah or the aspect of this pasuk of V'Yisim Nekiim Me Hashem, that you should be clean from God. That's much easier than Milotzis Yedei Abrios, from being clean from in the eyes of society. Why is that? Ki Heim Choshvi Machshavo Zaros, because people have strange thoughts, and therefore people can think, God knows what we're thinking, God knows if we're acting appropriately, objectively. But other people, we could be doing something which is objectively correct, but other people have these strange thoughts, and they may perceive that what we're doing is incorrect. And so this is a very, Rav Chasam Sofer writes that the mitzvah of Maris Ayin is one of the most difficult mitzvahs, is what he writes. But of course the question is, what are the parameters of the prohibition of Maris Ayin? Are we concerned by what one person may say? Let's say 95% of people think we're doing the right thing, 5% of people think we're doing the wrong thing. We should be concerned about that. So what are the parameters of Maris Ayin? So first of all, there are two different rationales for Meir's side. When it comes to the Mishnah, there's a Mishnah in Shkalim, Perek Gimel Mishnah Beis, which describes how officials who entered the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, they did so barefoot. They did so wearing garments that contained no hem parts and they contained wide sleeves, no pockets or cuffs. Why? Because let's say they became poor. People would say, oh, why they become poor? Because they stole from the treasury. And let's say they become wealthy. They're going to say, oh, why they become wealthy? Because they took the money from the treasury. And the Mishnah says, Adam tzarech latzeis yedei habrios kederech shetzarech latzeis yedei hamakom. That a person should be appear to be clean and correct before people, just as he has to be appear to be clean and correct and appropriate before God. And he cites the pasuk, "V'yisim nikiyim Hashem Yisrael," that we should be clean or without guilt before God and for the Jewish people. And he also cites the pasuk, "Mishlei matzachein v'seichel tov b'nei elokim v'yadav," should find grace and favor and good understanding in the eyes of God and man. So here it seems that the rationale for being careful in what we do, based on what other people might think, is that people shouldn't think that we're bad people. Again, the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, tells us that if there's a city in which there's active idol worship, you can't enter into the city. And Rashi says, Mishum Chishad, because of suspicion that Yehu Nami Azul Lemiflach, because they're going to say that he's, why is he going to this city? Because he's going to worship. Again, the concern is one of Chishad, or one of suspicion that we're going to be acting inappropriately. Another example of this, the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph Mishnah Tes, says that you can't rent a bathhouse to a non-Jew because Shehu Nikra al Shemo, since it's called by the name of the owner. And the Peres Mishnayis, the Rambam, the Rambam explains that what this means is that let's say the non-Jew, it says Moshe's bathhouse, but he sold to a non-Jew and it keeps the name Moshe's bathhouse. And let's say there's a non-Jew who is heating up the bathhouse on Shabbos, and people are going to say, oh, that the Jew Moshe hired the non-Jew to heat up the bathhouse, and this is a Chil Hashem, because they're going to think that he's a bad guy. They don't realize that let's say he rented it out completely to the non-Jew. So again, this is one aspect of quote unquote Meir's side or Chishad, is that suspicion that the Jew is acting inappropriately. Another example of this, the Gemara in Yoma, Daf Pei Vav Amud Aleph, says, what's Chil Hashem? Again, sometimes Chil Hashem could be related to Meir's side. Why are you profaning God's name? So Rav said that if you buy in credit, if it's viewed as stealing, and then, so it's interesting. Here it says, because that if Rav says that, for example, if I were to buy meat and I don't pay right away, I buy in credit. So Rashi there says, on the one hand, they're going to think that I'm a gazla. They're going to think that I'm a thief. So that indicates maybe, again, that don't engage in certain behavior that people are going to think that you're a thief. But Rashi continues and says, "V'lamad mimene lios mezalzel b'gezel," and people will learn that you don't have to take theft so seriously, or this type of theft so seriously. In a society where you're supposed to pay right away, and then they don't pay right away, so this is wrong. So this is a second reason, though, second concern of quote unquote Meir's side. Concern number one, so they're going to think that you're a bad person. Concern number two is they're going to learn from you bad behavior. They're going to think that certain behavior is acceptable. Another example of the second type of concern from Meir's side is the Gemara in Krisus Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, where Rav says, "Dam dagin shekinso aser," that fish blood that one collected in a receptacle is prohibited. And Rashi says that the michlaf bedam behema v'ra omer mutar lechol dam. So I have fish blood. Fish blood is not prohibited according to the Torah. Blood from a chicken, blood from a behema, an animal. So that blood is forbidden. So if they see someone with fish blood, and they will say, "Oh, this blood is blood from meat," blood from an animal, and they're going to think that blood from an animal is permitted. So again, we have these two different reasons for the prohibition of maaser. You even think that I'm a bad person. And again, as we mentioned, it may reflect badly on Torah and on God and God's reputation. And number two is the concern that if they seem engaging in certain behavior, then they may mistakenly start engaging in behavior that is prohibited. I took fish blood, but they thought that this is blood from an animal. They're gonna consume blood from an animal. Now, I've used two terms until now, maaser ayin and chashad. And the question is, are they two different prohibitions? So the truth is, the chesed l'avram, in the name of, in chelek aleph, siman chof aleph, in the name of the nesivos ha-mishpat, and also the shut uvacharta v'chayim, Shlomo Kluger, in siman samach ches, states that chashad is suspicion that I'm a sinner, and maaser ayin is the concern that someone will think that something that is forbidden is really permissible. So that he splits it. They split it. Chashad, maaser ayin. I'm a bad person. Maaser ayin is that they may end up engaging in forbidden behavior based on what they saw me do. They may make certain mistakes. So Rav Asher Weiss disagrees. He says that it's a nice split, but sometimes it seems that that's not the case. So for example, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, states that Rav says, wherever the Chachamim forbade something because of maaser ayin, it's even forbidden, b'chadri chadarim, even in the innermost chamber, even in private. Whatever Chazal forbade something based on maaser ayin, it's even forbidden, b'chadri chadarim. And Rashi says, why are they forbidden because of maaser ayin? Sheharo'ehu choshto b'dvar aveira, because someone may still see him in his private chambers. He thinks no one's watching, but maybe someone is watching him, and they're going to suspect him that he's committing a sin. So that seems like chashad. So the Gemara calls this maaser ayin, and Rashi says the concern is they're going to be suspicious that he did something bad. So it seems that at least Rashi, he uses these terms interchangeably. There's also a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Chaf Gilmud Aleph, which says that there are four different reasons why the Torah said to leave peah, as which leave part of your field for the poor, b'sof sadehu. That there are four reasons why Torah said to leave your peah at the end of the field. And one of the reasons would be b'nei chashad, so that people won't, because if you, let's say, you leave in the middle of the field, people won't think that you actually left part of the field for the poor people to take. And so they're going to say, tovo meir la'adam shelo hiniach peah b'sadehu. That they're going to say, it's a chashad concern. That they're going to say, you're a bad guy because you didn't leave field. You leave pay in your field. However, when the Tosafta speaks about this concern, it calls it maaser ayin. So again, it's not clear, at least the way Rav Asher Weiss says, he says the terms of maaser ayin and chashad are interchangeable. You can't just do the clean split. And he gives these two examples why they seem to be interchangeable. Now, is the prohibition of maaser ayin a Torah prohibition, or is it a rabbinic prohibition? Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and he says, and it's an Or Chaim Chelek Dalet Siman Pei Beis, and he actually wants to make the split. He says the Isser of Chashad that we find in Maseches Shkalim Per Gimel Mishnah Beis about going into the temple treasury without pockets, that they might suspect that you took something, that's the Torah prohibition of Yisem Nikiyim. He actually splits it between Chashad and maaser ayin, like the Chesed Lavram and the Shutu Vacharta Vachayim. Moshe thinks that that if you engage in behavior, that someone's going to think that you're a bad guy, that you're a sinner, so that's the Isser Doraisa of, or that's, you're violating the Mitzvah Doraisa of Yisem Nikiyim Hashem Yisrael. But then the concern that maybe someone's going to see you're engaging in behavior, and because of that, they're going to think that something that is permitted, that something that is forbidden is really permitted. So that's a rabbinic prohibition of maaser ayin. So Moshe splits this in the Doraisa and the Rabbanon, whether they're going to think you're a bad guy or whether they might think that something that is forbidden is really permitted. Rav Asher Weiss doesn't think that to be the case. Because, and he brings a proof from the Rosh. The Rosh in Meseches Beya, Perek Aleph, Simon Yudalad. So there he's quoting a Gemara, quotes the Gemara of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai have a debate about whether you're allowed to move a ladder on Yom Tov from one dovecot to another. So there's a concern of Maaris Ayin. They're going to think that you are fixing your roof. So there's a question in the Gemara as to when Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue. And that Beis Shammai says, you're not allowed to move the ladder from dovecot to dovecot. And Beis Hillel allows it. And there's a debate as to whether Beis Hillel allows it in private property or even in public property. So the Rosh writes that since this is only an Isser Darabanan, so we are lenient. And therefore, we hold that Beis Hillel holds that you can always move the ladder from dovecot to dovecot. So he understands, and again, what is this case? This case is that the concern here is if you move it from dovecot to dovecot, people are going to think that you're sinning. So what do we see from here? That the Rosh holds that the concern that you might be sinning is only a rabbinic prohibition, because we're saying safek d'rabbanan l'kula. It's a safek, it's a doubt as to what Beis Hillel holds. Is he lenient in all cases or only in private property? So because we're lenient, so we're holding that concern of chashad is only d'rabbanan, and that's why, according to Rav Asher Weiss, he thinks that Maaris Ayin is a rabbinic prohibition. But what do you do with the pasuk? V'yisim nekiyim, that's a pasuk min haTorah. So he compares it to another mitzvah. In the Rambam, in Hilchos Avelus, Perek Yudat Halacha Aleph, the Rambam lists that there are a whole bunch of rabbinic mitzvahs. So, Bikur Cholim, Nichum Avelim, Hotzas Ameis, Achnosis Kala, inviting guests, taking care of all the needs of burial. And the Rambam describes all these mitzvahs as mitzvahs d'rabbanan. But then he says that even though all these mitzvahs are only rabbinic, midrabbanan, they're included in the mitzvah d'oraisa of v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. Anything that you want others to do to you, you should do for other people. So, meaning what? That there's this overall mitzvah called do good to other people. Whatever you want people to do to you, you should do to other people. And that goal, anytime you do that, you fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. Then the rabbis created certain rules or certain rules in certain situations, or they said, which when you do these things, then you fulfill the mitzvah of v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. When you visit the sick and take care of their needs, you're fulfilling the mitzvah d'rabbanan bikur cholim, but you're also fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraisa of v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. This is overarching mitzvah of v'yahavta l'recha kamocha, and the rabbis created mitzvos, the rabbanon, the rabbis, they created obligations in certain circumstances, and when you do those, you fulfill the derisa of v'yahavta l'recha kamocha. So similarly says Rav Asher Weiss that there's a general concept of yisem nekiyim, that we should be perceived as guiltless, as acting appropriately in the eyes of God and in the eyes of man. And then the rabbis came along and said, in these certain circumstances, you should act like this, you should do this, you shouldn't do that. Why? Because of this overarching deraisa of yisem nekiyim. So that's how Rav Asher Weiss understands the mitzvah of Maaris Ayin. So all these cases of Maaris Ayin in the Gemara, so these all were created by the rabbis. But when you act in a way that you appear to be guiltless and you appear to be acting appropriately you're perceived as acting appropriately in the eyes of society, you fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of v'yisim nekiyim. Now, there's a shaila that the Rishonim and the Achronim discuss as to what types of behavior are considered Maaris Ayin. What if it was not mentioned by Chazal? And there are certain cases in the Mishnah Gemara, we mentioned some of these cases, where the rabbi said, don't act like this because of Maaris Ayin. What about other cases where there's a concern that someone may think you're doing X when you're really not doing it? Or they may think, because you're doing this, so then they can do this. They can do something else. But it's not mentioned in Chazal. Can you add new Ma'arsayin cases that do not exist in times of Chazal? So for example, the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredea, Hilchas Basar B'chalav, Simon Pei Zayin Sa'if Dalet. So then the Shulchan Aruch says, Asur Levashel B'chalavim M'pnei Ma'arsayin. You can't cook meat in human milk. It's based on the Rashba. The Chazal never made a gzeira about cooking human. There's no Torah prohibition of cooking human milk with meat. But the Rashba says that it's asur, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this. So what do we see from here? We see that perhaps you can add on to the rabbinic prohibitions if it's likely that it could lead to perhaps confusion and mistake, because maybe if someone sees you cooking human milk with meat, then they might cook regular milk with meat, animal milk with meat. Another example, the Ramah writes in Simon Pei Zayin Seif Gibel that let's say you have almond milk. So again, to mix and to cook almond milk and meat together, it's no problem. It's only milk that comes from an animal, but milk that comes from an almond to mix with meat, that's not a problem. So, but what about Ma'arsayin? On a Torah level, it's not a problem. What about Ma'arsayin? So the Ramah writes that we make milk from almonds and place bird meat, basar of, next to it, hov eino rak midrabanan, because the prohibition of chicken and milk is only nisa drabanan. Therefore, we're not concerned of Ma'arsayin when the underlying concern that it might lead to something would only be nisa drabanan. So, since chicken and milk is only drabanan, so if you put almond milk next to, you mix almond milk with chicken, and someone makes a mistake, and they have regular milk with chicken, the worst case is only Nisa Drabanan. So therefore, we're not concerned with Ma'arsayin when, worst case scenario, someone's going to violate Nisa Drabanan. However, the Ramah writes about Basar Behema when it comes to animal milk. So what do? If you want to mix almond milk with meat, you want to have coffee with almond milk together with your meat, with your steak, so then you have to put by the almond milk almonds. So people will see, why are you putting almonds by my coffee with almond milk? Because the milk is not milk from an animal, it's almond milk. So if you have the package probably of almond milk also by the coffee, so then there's not a problem on our side. It should be noted the Shach argues on the Ramah. Shach doesn't even allow chicken. Is concerned for Ma'arsayin with chicken and milk as well. As the Ramah says, we're only concerned with Ma'arsayin if it could lead to, in cases not mentioned by Chazal, in situations that could lead to a violation on the Torah level. The Shach says, no, even if it could lead to a violation on a rabbinic level, we're still concerned. So what do you see from here, though? The Rashba, Shulchan Aruch, Ramah are adding cases of Ma'arsayin even when it was not mentioned by Chazal. Now, the Magen Avram, also in Simon Tuf Sabach Gimel Sif Katan Hey, says that in Constantina, they have the custom to make this food called Pashilish, or to roast fish with matzah fuya, with matzah meal. I'm sorry, that the Hagim Isser, that they would not engage in making this pashilish or to roast fish in matzah meal because Mishub Dasi Lichlufe, because they might make a mistake. What does that mean? So the Pri Chadash in Or Chaim, Simon Tav Samchav Sif Beis, explains that what the Magen Avraham is talking about is that he holds that people have this custom, not that they didn't permit want to fry fish with matzah meal on Pesach because people might make a mistake. And in fact, there was a case. So there was a Maisa Shehaya, there was a story where there was a wife of a chaver who did this, and her neighbor didn't realize that it was matzah meal and thought that you can bake on Pesach with regular flour. So then the Pre-Chadash quotes this, and he said, I disagree with all this. He says, you can't make new gzeros. So one woman made a mistake. He can't make new gzeros. And he also, that's what he writes here when it comes to this matzah meal. But then what does he do with the Rashba? In the case where he says, up to me, said the Pri Chadash, I would l'chadchila think that you can cook, what is permitted, like, let's say, human milk with meat, and I'm not concerned with Marasayan, but what can I do? Kvar horazakin le'isr. What can I do? The Rashba already passed that it's usr. And, okay. And we should listen to him, except if something's an isr drabona, then you don't have to listen to him. Like what the Ramah writes. So the interesting, the Pri Chadash is not so excited about adding new gzeros. At most, he's going to say, because the Rashba said what he says, okay, maybe when the underlying isr, that could lead to an isr doraisa, okay, so if it can lead to an isr doraisa, so fine, we have the Rashba, we should be strict. But if at worst could only lead to an isr drabanan, so then we don't have to be strict from our side. Now, at the same time, the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, Hilchos Kilei Begadim, Simon Reis Tzarichet Seif Aleph. So there the Shulchan Aruch, he's really quoting the Rush. He says that there used to be, the Chazal mentioned, there was a prohibition of mixing silk and wool garments. Because the silk, people got mixed up between the silk and the flax. And if you weave silk and wool garments and you wear a silk and wool garment, people think, they're going to think, oh, you can have a flax and wool garment. People are going to confuse silk and flax. But the Rush writes that, no, there's no prohibition anymore. Even though the Chachamim forbade, because of Marasayan, meshi with tzemer, silk with wool, because it looks like flax. It says va'idna meshi matzui b'nei v'kol makir. But everyone knows nowadays what silk is. It doesn't look like flax, and therefore there's no problem of Marasayan. So this is fascinating because this is a gezeira based on Chazal, and the Rush says it no longer applies. So based on this, the Rav Asher Weiss in Minchas Asher Yoredeya Chelak Aleph Siman Samach Zayin has a big chiddush. He says all of the gzeros dealing with Marasayan in times of Chazal, they're not necessarily fixed. The gzera of Chazal regarding Marasayan is the following: is there a likelihood that someone that people who follow halacha, that reasonable people will see what you're doing and will make a mistake and will think that you're doing something wrong? The cases in the Gemara or in the Mishnah about Marasayan were examples of a principle. It's not that all of the examples in the Mishnah, the Gemara, apply nowadays definitively. No, those were examples of situations where people thought that this behavior, they made reasonable assumptions. They thought that this behavior, that someone was engaging in the wrong behavior, or maybe they can lead to a certain mistake. But he writes that the chol shelafi hamakom vazmanim mitzias achayim ein bo mishum marasayan. If he says that it depends on the place and the time and the reality, if there's no marasayan, va'adam hagun min hayishu. And a proper person from the society will judge the other person favorably. Shuv ein bo iser mishum marasayan. There's no problem marasayan. Even if in the days of Chazal, it was viewed as marasayan. It's a big chiddush. I'm not sure if everyone holds like Rav Asher Weiss, but this is a big chiddush. But what's his proof? He says, for example, what about shaving? So when I walk around, if I'm clean shaven, so maybe I use the razor. He says, no. In Adam Hagun, people understand that it's so easy to use regular shavers, and they assume that if someone's from, you probably use the shaver. And he says the same thing when it comes to shaitels. We'll talk about that a bit later. This is the same issue. It depends what people who are Hagun, who are proper, if they would judge someone favorably, reasonable assumption. So therefore, there's no problem of Maris Ayin. Now, what about some contemporary cases? He makes one other point. He does say there's a Gemara in Yoma, Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, where it talks about the people from the house of Avtinas, that they made they knew the recipe for the Ketores. You know, the Ketores is very unusual, the incense, special qualities in the Beis HaMikdash, and they knew the secret from it. And there the Gemara says that Me'olam lo yatzas kalam mevusemes mibotayim. Never did a perfumed bride emerge from their homes. Ukshenosim isha mimakom acher masim ima shelo titpaseim. And when they would marry a woman from a different place, they stipulated with her that she would not perfume herself. Shelo yomer mimasiak toras mit basmim. So the cynics would not say that it's the work that basically, oh, how'd she perfume herself? With the work of the incense. And you have to be v'yisim nekiyim. So as for Vashur Weiss, I understand. Why can't you say that a proper person will understand the people from Beis Avtinas acted appropriately? Why do you assume that if the women are using perfume, they're specifically using the perfume of the Ketores? Why don't you say, just like you assume the person who comes clean shaven used a appropriate shaver, so too, the woman from Beis Avtinas, she's coming regularly perfumed, she got a perfume in a kosher way, not from the Ketores. So Rav Asher Weiss suggests that maybe it depends. If it's a matter of public concern, if you're a public official, then you have to go more out of your way to make sure that you are clean in the eyes of the people. If it's you're like a private citizen, a private citizen just by yourself and, you know, what people are going to think about you, so then you assume, then you don't have to worry so much about some individuals who might think inappropriately about you. If regular people would think reasonably about your behavior, you're good. You don't have to worry about someone acting unreasonably, someone who's not hagun, who's not proper acting unreasonably. But if you are a public figure, so then you have to be more concerned. You have to go more extreme. Okay, let's talk about some contemporary cases. So what about driving to shul, as if a man drives to shul after his wife lights candles on Erev Shabbos? This is a famous tshuva by Rav Moshe Feinstein, Chelek in Or HaChaim, Chelek Av Siman Tzarivav. What's beautiful is that this tshuva is really beautiful because he says that Neneti Ma'od Asher, he benefited so much that the questioner Nizdariz Lekayim Mitzvahs Tochacha. That he was alert and he was energetic to fulfill the mitzvah of rebuke, lefi dato, according to his understanding. And he says, God forbid that I should be particular about this, I should be upset about this. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the God of Yisrael, is excited to receive rebuke from someone else. So someone saw him driving in a car after, let's say, candlelighting time. Let's say candlelighting time is 18 minutes before sunset. So Rav Moshe generally holds that Tosefes Shabbos, it seems from this tshuva, he may hold Tosefes Shabbos just a couple of minutes before sunset. So he would drive in the car, or he would drive in a car after candlelighting before sunset. So, Mara sign, people are going to think that he's acting inappropriately. And Rav Moshe says that we're not concerned about it. He says, "Lasos davar heter mefor sam bishvil eza nashim shiidu lachshol shudvar iser lo asru." But to do something which is completely permitted, everyone knows about it because some people make a mistake to think that's forbidden. They didn't forbid this. So Rav Moshe at the end says, "Okay, I'm not going to get into a car anymore after candlelighting," but he thinks that it's not a problem. That again, for a few people who don't know the halacha, we're not concerned about that. What about going to a non-kosher restaurant? So here, Rav Moshe Feinstein in Or HaChaim, Chelek Beis Simon Mem, explains that one should be strict. He thinks that there is a concern of Marasayin and Chshad. He is concerned about it. He's concerned that people are going to think that maybe this place is kosher, or maybe that you're eating non-kosher food. However, he writes that if the person is starving and he is tsar, tremendous, he's very hungry, then one perhaps can be lenient to eat things that are otherwise permitted. But you have to do it, he says, bitsina, in private. In case of distress and loss, the rabbis did not make a decree. And he says, as long as people on the outside don't see him. It seems that Rav Moshe is saying that there might be a Maris Ayin problem. Let's say people don't see you from the outside. So what's the concern? The concern is maybe Maris Ayin is even forbidden b'chadri chadarim, because you never know, someone may see you. So Rav Moshe says that no, you don't have to worry about that. He's saying again, in general, we should be concerned, but if you're suffering, then we could be lenient. Why? That if the people on the outside don't see you, and the people on the inside see that you're getting, let's say, a fruit plate, so nothing wrong. So what are we concerned? Maybe there's this general gzeira marasayin. So the general gzeira marasayin, we're not worried about b'makom tzar in situations of distress, if you're starving. Now, this is a bit of a chiddush that Moshe says, because how do you know this concept of makom tzar lo gozer rabbanon is generally said in the context of Shabbos. When there's something, there's a rabbinic decree on Shabbos, so makom tzar lo gozer rabbanon, does it apply here? It's not so simple. So that's where Rav Asher Weiss doesn't agree. And Rav Asher Weiss thinks that, listen, we cannot invent new cases of maris ayin. It depends on time and place. Since everyone knows that a religious Jew wouldn't go into a non-kosher restaurant for a meal, and it's known that many from people go into non-kosher restaurants for business meetings. So he thinks there's room to be lenient, sort of like the case of the Rush, like the case of with the silk, even though maybe originally silk and wool was viewed as Maris Ayin, people get the wrong idea. Nowadays, everyone knows that many from people go into non-kosher restaurants and they get a fruit plate. He discussed it specifically in a case of a company cafeteria where they serve kosher, non-kosher food. You're not concerned about it. I was told the name of Rav Schachter. He said that nowadays it's so prevalent to have business lunches in non-kosher restaurants, so it's not a problem. What might be a problem from Maris Ayin perspective is, let's say that there is a restaurant with a weak hashgacha, that I don't hold of this weak hashgacha. So if I go into a treif restaurant, so no one's going to think that I'm getting treif food. They think I'm getting a fruit plate. But if I go into a restaurant with a weak hashgacha that I don't hold by, and I eat there, and someone sees me walk in, they might think that, what? They don't know I'm just getting the fruit plate. They might think that I hold of this hashgacha, and they will eat there. So if it's a weak hashgacha, that's probably much worse than if there's no hashgacha. What about par of milk immediately after a meat meal? So there's a tshuva by Rav Avadya Yosef, Chelek Vav, in Yoredeya Simen Ches. And there, the Rav Avadya Yosef writes that there's a lot of room to be lenient to use par of milk after the meat meal. Because number one is, the iser is not in the thing itself. In other words, it's having milk after meat, waiting a certain amount of time. So there's one reason to be lenient. He also says that par of milk is common. He says that everyone knows that there's par of milk, so you shouldn't be concerned with Maris Ayin, and as opposed to the case of the Rashba about human milk. That's not so common. He also says, the Pri Chadash writes, we don't make new decrees. And he says that in a situation that is reasonable and that is common, like that people... That there are permitted ways to do something, so there's no concern of Maris Ayin. So at the end of the day, he doesn't go as far as maybe we would like him to go, maybe, that he doesn't say that you can have par of milk with your coffee together with meat. So he didn't want to go that far. Maybe out of deference to the Shach. But he says, certainly, to have, let's say, coffee with almond milk after a meat meal and not waiting 6 hours, he thought that was permitted. However, to have, let's say, non-dairy milk in a meat meal, he said, if you have, let's say, the container of the non-dairy milk to show that it's non-dairy, then that would be okay. What about, a couple more points, a couple more examples, shaitels. So as I mentioned, Rav Moshe Feinstein is true about Shetos, and Evan Ezra Chelek Beis Simon Yud Beis. So there he says regarding Shetos, he says that he wants to say number one, it might only be an Isser Aseh, Marasan generally when it comes to Isurei Lav. And maybe just the obligation to wear a Shetel might be based on a Mitzvah Aseh that women should be modest. And he says in most instances, you can tell if a woman has a Shetel. And even if men don't realize this, women understand this. So therefore, he says it's not a problem. And again, this seems to be similar to what Rav Usher Weiss writes in Minchas Usher, Yordair, Al Chelak Av Simon Samach Zayin. He says that even though he says that Kevin Shiadua Sherabos Banos Asuchayo, since it's known that many women act in the way of valor, Venoshim Tzitkanios, Yosus Papeos Nachrios, and that righteous women go out with Shetels, Shuvlo Asrim and Shumarasayin. There's no prohibition of Marasayin. So he goes even further in Moshe. Moshe says that probably most women know that they're Shetels, and Rav Usher Weiss said we can assume that proper people will assume that the women are covering their hair. And regarding wearing non-leather shoes on Yom Kippur that look like leather shoes, it's interesting. The Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach writes in Mincha Shlomo Tinyana, Chelek Beis Siman Nun Gimel. So there, he says, it might be a problem. He says that when it comes to Shetels, he writes, that people know. Even though I don't know, but people know. But he says when it comes to the shoes that look like real shoes that are not, that's not so widespread. Wonder, maybe nowadays might be different. But he thinks it's a problem. He said if someone is sick and they need to put on leather shoes, that's okay. You're never worried about Marasayin in cases of a chola. Let's say in a case of a chola, when someone's sick, we allow them, like sick people, to set aside, let's say, certain rabbinic prohibitions. Ah, what about Marasayin? No, we're never worried about Marasayin when it comes to a chola. So he is strict when it comes to this. I wonder what Rav Usher Weiss would say if it's so common that people wear non-leather shoes that look like leather shoes on Yom Kippur, so query whether that would be, you know, according to Rav Usher Weiss, whether that would be a problem nowadays. Another possible modern day example is, let's say if you email someone with and they think that you are in Israel and you are in Israel and you send them an email and they don't know you're in Israel and let's say so you send an email and they think you're in America, so they think you're sending it on Shabbos. So is that an issue Marasayin? Do they know? Maybe, again, you could argue, though, that everyone, so Rosh Yeshiva suggested that might be a problem. Again, would Rav Usher Weiss think it's a problem? Maybe not. You might think that, no, that it's reasonable to assume maybe you're in a location where it's permitted, because you wouldn't be Mechal Shabbos. Attending a service in a Reform synagogue. So there could be broader issues than this. One potentially could make a split. I mean, there could be a general issue. Do we enter into non-Orthodox synagogues, which is probably a topic unto itself, may depend more on Minhag. But maybe there might be a difference in Marasayin whether you are simply going there, let's say for a family event, versus, you know, because maybe it's known that sometimes for Shalom Bayis, you go to a cousin's, cousin's bar bat mitzvah, even a non-Orthodox synagogue, you're there. And so maybe that might be less of a Marasayin problem. If you're davening there, let's say you only daven Orthodox, and you daven there, that might be more of a problem. Might be a problem besides the Marasayin, but that's another interesting way to look at it. You know, if I have to worry about what people are going to think, then does that mean that I don't need to judge people favorably? That it's their responsibility to be beyond reproach, and it's not my responsibility to give people the benefit of the doubt? So the answer is that our relationships with other people are not transactional, meaning we don't say that if you treat me nicely, then I will treat you nicely. That if you judge me favorably, then I will judge you favorably. Each one of us has a responsibility to promote a society of kindness and curiosity without being judgmental. We should strive to be positive and look for the good in others and try to help create a society of kindness and positivity. So how do we do that? First, we give others the benefit of the doubt. We develop an ayin tova and raise others' self-esteem by judging them favorably and believing in them. At the same time, many people struggle with this midah of judging favorably. And to those people, we should try to be free from suspicious behavior because we represent Torah. We are ambassadors of God. People view the Torah and God by the way we behave, for better or for worse. And people may also misunderstand what we are doing and think that something that is forbidden is really permitted. At the end of the day, if we do what's right, but are not concerned about Maaris Ayin, then we are doing what is objectively right. But if we are concerned with Maaris Ayin, then we develop a Shem Tov, a good reputation. And once we do that, people will trust us, and we will have the power to inspire others. And hopefully, we can try to do the best we can to observe the Torah, and also try to do the best we can to inspire others with our Torah. Including in trying to achieve that is being concerned about the principles of Maaris Ayin and Cheshad.